This is the 10th class. I'm going to be talking about saving and investing. I will not be getting into this in any depth this morning. I'll talk about it at the end of this class, but we have a little more advanced, what we call an advanced economics class, that we talk about things like investing and saving in a little more in-depth about the different ways of doing that. I'm just going to mention them, the ways of investing today. But today's really more of a study and a kind of hopefully a help in making decisions. The purpose of the whole class, as I've said several times, was to really, we put this class together to help people figure out how to get out of debt, look at the Bible, see what it says about being in debt, what it says about personal finances, and teach this course on what God has to say about money and how we're supposed to deal with it as Christians. The logical follow-up to that, of course, is once you're out of debt, then what? Okay. I actually changed this slide. In previous classes, have not had the word almost in that sentence up there. And that was for a good reason, because I didn't want to have to explain why. I usually tell people your best financial investment is always to pay off your outstanding debt. That's actually not completely true, and that's evidenced by the question, I believe, that Rachel asked a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, about paying off a loan and how do you know when you should do that and when you shouldn't do that. But I will say this, if you're in debt, your best financial investment is always, almost always, to pay off your outstanding debt. And the reason I put the almost in there is really because there are cases when if you have extra money, you can put that money away someplace safely and you can make more money in interest than you're paying on a payment for a car, for example. If you have in the last couple of years, a lot of cars I mentioned were available, loans for cars were available at 0% interest for quite a while there. Well, if you have a 0% interest loan and you have the money that you could pay the loan off, it's really, as far as a financial look at it, a better thing to put that into, for example, if you have the extra money, put it into a savings account. You can get online savings accounts today that earn 5% annual APR interest. So as long as it's not, the debt isn't getting worse and you have the asset, the car, and you haven't wrecked it or anything yet, then there are cases where and they're rare, where it is better, where you can take money if you have extra, you can put it away, have it earn more money than you're paying, even if your interest rate on a loan is maybe 3 or 4%. It's still better because you can earn five while you're paying the 3 or 4. Okay, that's about the only qualifier on that whole thing. Okay, other than that, certainly with credit card debt, consumer debt as we call it, your best financial investment is to pay off your outstanding debt first. And I wanted to say that to start this class. Okay, as I just mentioned, once you're out of debt, what do you do with money? If the Lord blesses you with an excess, what you have to do is figure out why God has given it to you. That's really not that hard. As a matter of fact, I was just speaking with Pastor Cole. I'm, of course, thinking about this class as I was getting ready this morning, and I walked in and I was just chatting briefly with Pastor, and we got talking about savings and investments, and I said one of the things in my life that I've seen is I've tried to follow the Lord's leading in my finances, is that just about every time that I end up with an excess, the Lord puts something on my heart that he wants me to do that, and it is almost never put it away for me. That's really what happens. I do save for my retirement, but almost always something comes up, there's a need, and it's funny how that works. I've had it happen where I've even gotten a bonus at work, and just the same time I get that, somebody came to me and really needed some money. They really had a need that was a legitimate need. They needed it much more than I did, and it happened to be the same amount of money. And it's just funny how those things work. So I got the check, and I'm looking at it, and the Lord says, you know what, that person really needs help. Okay. All right. Once you get over the, hey, this is mine, I told you my testimony used to be, what's mine is mine, and you're not getting it. once you get over that and you learn, as we've been learning about loving people and helping people and doing what the Lord wants you to do with your money, that gets a lot easier. But, of course, he doesn't always tell you to give it to this person or give it to missions or whatever. There are times that God gives you something to save. Has he given it to you to provide for somebody else's need? That's the next point up on the slide there. We tend to call this a rainy day, but I would call it, look, the Lord knows something's going to come up in your life that you need money for. So he might tell you, well, just put it somewhere and save it. That does happen. What about savings for big future expenses? We've talked about budgeting. We've talked about how you want a budget to save for maybe your next car. If you have a car payment now and you pay off the car, well, while that car is still running, keep paying yourself that payment. Put it into a bank account so that when the next car, when that car dies and you need the next car, you can buy the next one cash. That's a perfectly legitimate use of savings. You might need, everybody needs a new roof eventually if you own a house. Maybe the Lord's leading you to become, a nurse or a doctor or something. He does do that, and you can't be those things without going to school. And rather than rack up big education debt, why not? Maybe the Lord will give you money, and you can save it for those reasons. Retirement planning. This is always a difficult thing to talk about, and I'll get into this a little further into the class, but it's a hard thing because a lot of people I know have faith that, look, retirement isn't a biblical concept. You can't find it anywhere in the Bible. People believe, rightly so, that the Lord's going to take care of their needs throughout their life. But I also know people like myself that I believe that the Lord is, as I've said in previous classes, the Lord is using my job right now. I'm quite certain of this. He's given me a good salary, more than I need right now, so that I can save for the future. Now, that's my faith. Your faith might be different than that. Neither one is necessarily wrong or right. It's just whatever the Lord is leading you to do. So retirement planning is different for everybody. I realize that. When I get into talking about it, I'm going to be talking, of course, from my perspective. If you have any questions or a different perspective, just raise your hand and correct me or tell me a different viewpoint. That's okay. And what about investments? I'm going to talk about here in just a few minutes where I think the Scripture shows us that we're supposed to use money to trade money, use money to make money. I'll talk about that here in a minute. All right, but of course, as we do with this class, and certainly in this church, we want to know what the Bible has to say about savings and investments. Well, you're not going to find a lot of things where it talks about investments. That's a more recent word. It wasn't in Old English, I don't believe. But we do tend to look at the book of Proverbs for wisdom. So I took a bunch of verses out of Proverbs here, which we can maybe get a little something out of looking at it from the standpoint of savings and investments. Proverbs 11:14 says, "Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death." Okay, I'm just going to read through these really quick, and then I'm going to point out some things about them. Proverbs 11:16 says, "Strong men retain riches." Proverbs 11:28, "He that trusteth in his riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish as a branch." And Proverbs 13:22, "A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children." Proverbs 16:8, "Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right." And then Proverbs 21:20, "There is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up." Well, as we want to do, we want to take the whole counsel of God. And you look at some of these verses and you say, well, it looks like, for example, where it says strong men retain riches. Well, I want to be a strong man. I want to retain riches. A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children. Well, I'd like to be considered a good man from a biblical standpoint. So to leave an inheritance for my children's children, I'd probably need to save something. There's treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. Well, clearly the foolish man is spending it up, so the wise man, there's treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise. So clearly if there's the wise man has something that the foolish man is spending up and doesn't have, that must be some sort of saving or financial or material need that the wise man not only desires but has and keeps in his dwelling for when he needs it. If you follow that thought, anyway. But I do know from these other verses that riches profit not in the day of wrath, and that I shouldn't trust in my riches. Makes sense. And better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. Well, if you take all these verses and you really, and there's lots and lots and lots of verses about finances and money, things, material things in the Bible, there's almost a balance here where the Lord seems to be telling us that what we want to do is we want to plan ahead for the things we have need of. We trust in Him for them. We don't trust in our money for those things. And then we want to make sure that we don't have too much. I mean, that's often my prayer. I don't want enough, and I think that was Solomon's prayer too, that I don't want so much that I stop trusting in the Lord. My goal is not to be rich. That's not a biblical goal. If the Lord makes you rich, that's a different thing, and He's probably doing that for a reason. But I think there is scriptural evidence here that saving and having riches are things that strong men and good men do, rather than the foolish man who spendeth it up. Okay? I'm not going to teach a whole class on that. I just wanted to point those things out. In the first, I think, pretty sure it was the first class, where we were talking about, remember the subject was, is there hope for people that are in debt? I very quickly went over this Matthew 25, and if you want to read along with me, I'm going to read a lot of Matthew 25 here. I mentioned in the first class that, of course, Christ is speaking here, and in this chapter, certainly the application is a spiritual application. Okay, but if you look at the examples that he's using, there are practical principles here that you can get out of what this has to say. Now, again, you've heard this in the first class. But I also, in the first class, said that I hope you were familiar with it. Now, for those that aren't familiar with it, I'm going to read through these first 13 verses, and then I want to just speak quickly about this. It says in Matthew 25, verse 1, "Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were wise, and five were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their lamp, or in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, Give us your oil, or give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgin, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." That's definitely a spiritual application, that story, okay? But this idea of using the oil for the lamps is the material example I wanted to talk about here. If you look in verse 3, well, actually verse 2, it says five of them were wise and five were foolish. Well, why were the foolish foolish? It says, they that were foolish took their lamps and no oil with them. They did not prepare for what they knew that they were going to need. Okay. Same idea as far as saving and investing. Now I'm talking financial principles. I'm just trying to pull a little bit out of these verses. Why were they foolish? They were foolish because they didn't prepare. The wise were wise because what? They took oil for their lamps because they knew they were going to need it. So the wise prepared. In verse 8, the foolish said unto the wise, Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. And I liken that to the people today that don't plan ahead, don't save any money, don't keep their budgets, and then look for a handout. Right? There's a lot of people like that in the world today. They were foolish because they didn't plan for what they knew they were going to need, and then they went looking for a handout to the people that planned ahead. In verse 9, but the wise answered, saying, not so. Some people in the world might say, well, it's not very Christian. If somebody needs something and they ask you for it, you're supposed to give it to them. Well, what does the scripture teach? The wise answered, saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and for you. The wise didn't give it to the unwise, the foolish, because they needed it and they planned ahead for it. Okay. And then in verse 10, right in the middle of verse 10, they that were ready went in with him to the marriage. The only point I wanted to make about that is that those that prepared ultimately reached the goal, right, that they were trying to get to. Same thing in saving and investing. You want it. It's just like doing your budgets and your spending and you have to set goals. Remember I told you about having a financial plan. You have to set goals and come up with a plan and a way to manage that plan. Same thing with saving and investing. You have to set goals and figure out a way to get to where you want to go. And ultimately, you can reach your goal. I think that's one of the things this teaches here, that if you plan ahead, you can reach a goal. Okay? Not doing any planning, you're just going to end up like these virgins that didn't have any oil and missed out on everything because they didn't plan ahead. So what I wanted to say about this first section of Matthew 25 is that it teaches about being prepared, looking ahead, and planning for those material things that we'll need. I mean, I think that really clearly teaches that. That's not the application that Christ was talking about here, but he did use a material example in that parable there. So, as I said, same thing with saving and investing. Same chapter. Now, if you go to just the next section, I'm going to read 14 through 26 in Matthew 25. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. And likewise, he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast, that is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore not to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. I'm going to stop there. Again, this parable about the talents, Christ is teaching, I mean, this is spiritual application here, about using the talents, the things that the Lord blesses you with, your abilities for God, but he uses a material example. And the man with the 5 talents and the man with the 2 talents, what did they do? If you look in verse 16, then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them another 5 talents. What they did was use the money that the master had given them and used it to trade and to make it grow. Okay. And what did they hear at the, as you can see it in verse 23, His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Well, so we know that the one that didn't do anything with the money, the one that just went and hid it, he was called wicked and slothful. The person that went, the two that went and traded with the money and made it grow for their master, what did they get called? They get called, well done, good and faithful servant. We know from the first section there about the 10 virgins, that the ones that planned ahead were called wise. The ones that didn't were called foolish. So I just think as far as the material example here, I think it's a good way to look at saving and investing, right? I think there's biblical evidence right there that saving and investing is something God would have you to do if he blesses you with an excess. There's more to that. If you continue on in the whole chapter, the next section is about judgment of the Gentiles. You're familiar with these verses, I'm sure, where Christ said, For I was hungered and you gave me meat. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and took me in, naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. Jesus follows up this whole teaching, which includes, I believe, teaching about being prepared for the future and teaching about using material things to grow and give you income, for example. And then he follows the whole thing up with this other story about the judgment of the Gentiles, where he says that I was in hunger and you gave me meat, I was thirsty and you gave me drink. Where he teaches about, look, God will bless you sometimes with more than you need, and guess what you're supposed to do with it? You're supposed to help others. That should be your default position. Remember, I think in one of the previous classes I talked about, I like this little phrase, when in doubt, give. Don't hoard it. If you don't know what to do with it, give it. Okay? And I'll move on from that subject. So, what I'm trying to do is just give you a couple of scriptural examples there that some people have said to me, oh, I don't think, you know, God's going to take care of me, I don't need to save anything. Well, if that's your faith and you believe that, okay, I'm not going to argue with you. But I believe there's scriptural evidence that you should plan ahead for things you might have need of. So as far as saving and investing then, okay, you should not invest if you're not giving tithes and offerings. What I'm going to try and do now is give you some personal applications for how to make the decision. Should I invest or shouldn't I invest if I had an excess? Okay, if you're not giving tithes and offerings, don't invest. If you've got an extra, if you have what you're calling an extra, you're not giving tithes and offerings, you don't have an extra. You're stealing. You're robbing God, according to the scriptures. Do not invest if God is telling you to do something else. I just told you a little of my testimony. Every time I seem to get a little bit of extra, God usually tells me to do something else with it. And it's usually very clear. If you have high consumer debt, we talked about credit card debt, those kinds of debts. If you have that, don't invest. You should use any excess you have to pay those off. If you have unpaid debts and bills, if you have somebody that you owe money, because you, and there's lots of people that have had things happen in their life, they have doctor bills that they can't pay. Well, if you have an excess, you're still responsible in God's eyes for paying your debts. You should still pay your debts rather than investing. It's not an excess if you have debts that are outstanding. If you're living beyond your means. If you're living beyond your means, you most likely don't have any excess. Okay. If you're not willing to take the corresponding risk, and this is one of the things I talk about in the next class. I talk about some of the risks of investing and some of the, you know, we talk about stocks and bonds and those kinds of things. And very generically, for those of you that don't know that, the amount of return you get on an investment is directly proportional to the amount of risk that you're willing to take. Okay? If you don't want any risk, if you want to put your money somewhere that you know it's going to be there when you go back to get it, there's not very much return on that kind of an investment. A savings account is a perfect example of that. You put a savings account in a bank, it's going to earn very low interest. I don't even know what it is today, probably less than 2% of it at a regular branch. Might be more than that, I don't know. Internet, I mentioned you can get, there's internet savings accounts, you can get about 5% right now. But you're not going to do better than that for a safe, you know, federally insured investment. if you want to take the risk, you can go out and buy stocks. You can do speculative trading and really go wild and have the potential then for earning big returns on your investment. But that kind of flows into the next point. If the investment you're considering would not be acceptable to God, don't do it. One of the things that kind of bothers me about, I mean, I know Christians that have lots of investments, they're planning for the future, they're doing the things that I just got finished talking about, but they pay no attention to what they're buying stocks in. They're buying stocks in tobacco companies, in breweries, things that God wouldn't be pleased with. So you got to be really careful when you're choosing investments. You can't just go out and, well, that stock's done really well. It's projected to do well, so I'm going to get that. Well, is God happy with that? Okay, there's risk, and then there's real risk if you're doing what God wouldn't be acceptable to God. If God blesses you with an excess, you can invest if none of the other things are wrong that I in the last slide. Now, say you're budgeting, now you have your finances in order, you're not in debt, and God has blessed you with an excess. He doesn't seem to be leading you to give that to somebody else. It happens, I believe, as I mentioned, you plan for your future. Well, you need the investment. If you need the investment and it makes the best financial sense, what's a good investment? Your home. For those that are renters, I've mentioned this in previous classes, if you rent, you're paying money to your landlord, and you get to stay in your home for a month for doing that. Okay, at the end of that month, you don't have the money, and you don't have another place to stay unless you give them more. Okay, in a home, obviously, you're building equity. Yes, you might get a mortgage. You might pay a little more in interest. But at the end of each month, when you've made your payment, you've paid some on the equity. Now you own part of that house. So it's an investment. And with the exception of this particular time in history, housing values usually increase. And they will again, I believe. So it might make sense for those that are renting, for example, once you can save enough for a down payment, once your credit history is good enough to get a low interest mortgage, it might make sense for you to invest in a house. It's a perfectly legitimate investment. And it's something you need. You need some place to live. If you need current income, for those that are retired or can't work anymore, that was part of my discussion with Pastor Cole this morning, was that as far as planning for retirement, I mean, a lot of people that are retired that simply can't do their job anymore. I would say even most jobs today, you can't do if you become disabled in some way. For example, I couldn't do my job. If I lost my sight, I can't do my job, period. Doesn't mean I couldn't do anything, but I couldn't do my job. So my income would have to change. I'd have to have some source of income. Well, what can I do? I can be putting money away now, in case that happens to me someday, and that can provide for me, through interest and dividends, income, current income. Good use of money that God might bless you with. God knows that's going to happen, by the way, which is why he might not lead you to give it to somebody. He might lead you to invest. You are providing for future needs, down payment for a home, which I mentioned. While you're saving for that down payment, if you're going to buy a house, say you're going to buy a house that's $100,000, you might want to be putting down about 20% of that value. So you need $20,000. Well, unless you get paid an awful lot of money, you're not going to come up with $20,000 tomorrow. You're going to take time to save that money. Well, what are you going to do with that money while you're saving it? You're going to keep it in your savings account? That's probably not a very good thing to do. You can do much better than that as far as return on it. So it's a good reason to invest. For future needs, for educating children, for example, or retirement, which is one of the things I'll talk about here in a few minutes. Now, this goes along with the last one on the last slide. If God blesses you with an excess, invest if you believe God will be pleased with both your motives and the actual investment. It's just another point to say that you really need to consider where you're putting your money. If God gives it to you, it's His anyway. I'm sure He doesn't want you to spend it or invest it in certain areas. I mentioned about your motive. If your motive is to get rich, I'm going to go out and get the riskiest, highest return investment I can find because it'll give me more money. Well, that's not a good motive. God wouldn't. I don't think He'll honor that one. You know, doesn't mean you can't use risky investments as part of a portfolio, but just be really careful about investing. Make sure God is part of the decision about where you put your money, is what I'm trying to say. Okay, I'm going to give you a bunch of things up here on the screen. Where would you want to save money? What things are out there? I mean, most of you know what you can invest in if you had an excess. Of course, there's savings accounts, which I mentioned. You can go to a bank and get a savings account. You can go online and you get a savings account. You can also get savings bonds. The government, I think they're double E bonds. There's also life insurance policies and annuities, which can provide, which can be an investment. They're not always an investment, but they can be. Certificates of deposit, or CDs as they're called, is another option. It's a very safe way of investing. Real estate, I mentioned you can buy your own home. Your own home is an investment. Certainly if you have the home that you're living in that has maybe room for two families and you rent out to somebody else, or you might buy more than one home and rent an entire home to somebody else, that's an investment. It can provide income for you. Stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. Basically, they're ways of purchasing. Well, stocks and mutual funds can. Stocks are ways of purchasing parts of a company. Okay, bonds are usually issued by companies or municipalities that are trying to. They're basically taking a loan from you, and they're looking to pay you interest to have your money now. And mutual funds are just ways to buy groups of those things together. My next class is where I talk a lot more about what those things are. 401ks and 403b plans are really pretty good plans. They're retirement, for those of you that aren't familiar with them, they're retirement plans through an employer. I believe the only difference between a 401k and a 403b is that 403b is for nonprofit or government employees. But it's the same as a 401k if you're working for a private company, which is usually where you have the ability to save some of your money each paycheck, and the company will put that into a managed, there's actually a managing company that takes your money and will put it where you specify. And also your company, in most 401ks, will provide some sort of a match. In other words, like at my company will give me 50 cents on the dollar for the first 6% of my salary that I put in. So in other words, as long as I put in 6% of my paycheck, I will get 3% additional from the company for free. That's a benefit of working someplace. They're all different. Some of them are dollar for dollar up to 3%. Some of them are more than that. Some are less than that. Depends on your employer, really. But it's a great way, I mean, and I recommend, if you happen to work at a place that has a 401k plan, if you are not taking advantage of the match, I don't think you're being very wise, because it is them giving you money. Great investment. You start right off. If I put in 6% of my paycheck, I start right off putting away 9% because they're giving me 3. That's 50% return? You're not going to get that anywhere. 50% right off the bat before I actually put it into an investment. Okay, just a smart way to go. IRAs, you can do similar things to 401ks. There's not a match with an IRA. There are such things as employer, what do they call them, SEP IRAs. I mean, it depends on who you work for. There are IRA programs where companies will put money into an account for you. IRAs, you can put your own money in. 529 accounts are ways to save money for education. But the benefit of the 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, 529s are tax savings. I mentioned in the 401k, and it's the same with the 529s, I can put 6% of my paycheck into my 401k. My company puts 3% in. And that money goes in there before I'm taxed on it. So what that means is now I get an additional, depending on my tax bracket, I get an additional increase in my, say it's an increase, I don't get that money taken away from me from by Uncle Sam. Okay, so that money goes in, it's in my account, it grows, the returns that it makes are mine. I have to pay taxes on it later, presumably when I'm in a lower tax bracket. Okay, so it's a way to save additional money. So those kinds of things, retirement plans, IRAs, they're all similar in that regard, in that there's a tax benefit to them, which compounds your ability to have higher returns. I have just a couple minutes left, but what I'm going to do here is just show you very quickly that if you want to save money, you've all probably heard, start young for saving for retirement. But just to give you an idea, and you can get an idea based on your age and what you can do financially if God blesses you with it and he leads you to do that. This is just a chart that shows you what it would take to accumulate $1 million by age 65. Well, 10% is monthly compounding in here. Now, 10% is a reasonable, for example, if you have a combination of stocks and bonds, fairly aggressive but not out of control in a portfolio, 10% annually is not hard to achieve. Okay, not every single year, but on average, you average out 10%. That's not hard to do. Just to give you an example, I think this year my 401k made about 14%. So 10% is pretty easy. So if I'm going to average there next year, I can make less than that. You know what I mean? But if you started somebody at age one, if you had a child and started putting away $14 a month, by the time that kid turned 65, he'd have $1 million. That sounds doable, doesn't it? For those of you parents that have young children, I could even start putting money away for them. I didn't start until I was in my 20s. But even there, $95 a month is not necessarily impossible. It depends on your income and what your budget looks like and all those things. But it's not impossible. Once you start getting older, it gets harder. I'm now 40. And if I had no savings right now, for me to get to $1 million, not that I need $1 million, I just picked that number. I'd have to save $754 a month. Well, I can't do that. Not happening. Okay. But say you're older now, and you're 65 already, you could change it to 85. And if you're 65, you'll still have 20 years till you're 85. I mean, it's not inconceivable at $1,300 a month that you couldn't save $1 million by the time you're 85. Of course, I keep going back to the qualifiers. If the Lord leads you to do that, if he gives you the money to do that. But what I'm trying to show you by these slides is that it's not impossible to save $1 million. Okay? Let's talk more reasonable numbers. Okay? $100 a month. How will $100 a month grow? $100 a month for 5 years at 6% interest will leave you about, just under $7,000. $100 a month for 20 years will leave you at 6% interest, will leave you about $46,000. I'll show you the difference here between interest rates. At 8%, that same $100 a month for 20 years would give you $58,000. Now, if you think about what that does, this is what you hear about the power of compounding interest, okay? The difference between that $58,000 and the $24,000, $100 a month for 20 years is $24,000, okay? So if you take the $58,000 that you would have after 20 years at 8% interest minus what you put in there, you've made $34,000, almost $35,000 on only $24,000 of your own money. See, it can really compound over time. So I really encourage people to save money according to your faith. If God leads you to do that, if he provides you an excess. Okay? Now, how do you do all that? Well, that's what the next class is really about. There's an awful lot to investing. It's a very, very complicated thing. And even the advanced economics class doesn't really get deep into that. If you need some advice, I'm not a financial advisor, not a professional financial advisor, but I might be able to help you if you have questions about it. The next class, if we do it again, we'll talk about things like housing and mortgages and As a matter of fact, I can tell you what the subjects are. Should you rent or buy? How much can you afford? The real estate transaction itself, financing the transaction, the fine print that exists in mortgages, refinancing. I talk about those things as far as the housing goes. Life insurance, we talk about things like fundamental insurance concepts, estimating your needs for life insurance and the kinds of insurance protection that are available out there. Personal investing, I talk about, that's where it says investment basics there. I talk about risk versus return, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and other investments. I talk about that for a couple of classes. So just a little more in depth about what they are, how they work, how they could help you to make your money grow. Retirement plan, I talk a little more in depth about employer-sponsored retirement plans, 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, annuities, things like that. And then I talk about tax planning. One of the best ways to increase your returns on your money, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, is to shelter it from taxes. The laws are written such that you don't have to pay taxes on several kinds of investments. So why would you? It's whatever your tax bracket is. Say you're in the 15% tax bracket. Well, you want a 15% return on your money? Put it somewhere that Uncle Sam can't get it. Right there. You've saved 15%. So anyways, that's the next class. I never do it justice in this class, the savings and investing, but at least you have some sort of a financial, a biblical basis for saving and investing, maybe some ideas on how to make decisions of when you should do that, when you shouldn't do that. And if you have any questions, let me know. I am out of time. Okay, thanks.